Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello, London. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's the greatest parent of all time. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, London. We're much better than last week's audience. Oh, no, hold on. Gets confusing. They're going out in a very weird order, these. Anyway, welcome. Love to see you all. Thanks for coming. Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to Touche Turtle and Dum Dum the other day. That's going to fucking sort their kids from the adults. They called it Ralistapa, but Wally Gator doesn't think it's going to catch on. Come on. Do you remember Wally Gator, Dave? Wally Gator was a swinging alligator in a swamp. I've just suddenly remembered the theme tune. Backstage, just as I was standing here. Don't wait till later when he really starts to rump. See you later, Wily Gator. Good show. Touche Turtle and Dum Dum. I'm doing too many of these in a row. So there isn't much to talk about. I'm doing my Peter Kay material about things that no one remembers. It's okay, that's except for me. My daughter turned 9 years old at the weekend. Absolutely unbelievable. 9 years. She's halfway to getting around the fucking house. That's like, look, just 9 short years to go and I'm free. Except I've got a 6-year-old as well. So 12 short years. I'm definitely going to be dead by the time. I know. There's nothing beyond being a parent. And she got loads of presents and stuff on her birthday. I got nothing. Why don't I get something for 9 years of being a parent? I've been a parent for 9 years of my life. It's almost a tenth of my life, or something honest. One sixth of my life, something like that. I don't even know what it is. I don't know where I am anymore. Nothing. No one gives you anything. I did all the hard work in this. I think my wife was involved somewhere along the lines. But it's fine. Look, we're going to crack straight on because we have an amazing guest for you this week. This is going to go out quite soon. This is going to be a book club episode, but we're going to, you know, talk about all other stuff as well. She is probably best known for being a researcher on great movie mistakes. Then not being anything to do with Great Movie Mistakes 2. Then becoming a junior researcher for Great Movie Mistakes 3. There's an emotion. There's something happened, isn't it, between 1 and 3. We're going to find out all about that. And then back to being a researcher on Great Movie Mistake 4. So she worked her way back up. Don't know what she's done since then. Will you please welcome the incredible Rosie Jones, ladies and gentlemen. It's Rosie Jones, Great Movie Mistakes. From 3 of the 4 Great Movie Mistakes. Rosie Jones! What happened between Great Movie Mistakes 1 and Great Movie Mistakes 3?
I am fuming.
Right.
I worked on 2.
Did you? Not on the IMDb, not according to IMDb?
Sure.
Why were you a junior researcher on number 3 if you were a researcher on number 1? What happened? This is a hard-hitting interview straight away. Going to get to the truth.
I'm honestly so angry because I was a researcher on 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, you got 4, definitely. Junior researcher.
So either the little people at IMDb fucked up, or on Movie Mistakes 2, I did such a shit job. They were like, leave that woman off the credits.
Yeah.
It was my first 4 jobs in TV,
right.
And it was brilliant. I literally went into the office every day with a big bag of watches and I would just watch films every day and look for the mistakes.
Did they make you watch the whole film? They didn't go, we found some mistakes. No, you had to. You
and
had to find the mistakes.
I'm finding them. That's called research.
That's amazing. I would have just Googled great movie mistakes and let someone else do the job.
I did that, yo!
What was the best mistake you found? Do you remember which?
Oh,
yeah.
God, they were all just so pedantic. My favourite ones were like the period dramas. So they were in big dresses and they cut to the sky and there's like a helicopter.
Was that in Downton Abbey? I missed it. Brilliant. Well, look, I mean, that's part of what I love about your career is you'd started right in the back room.
Yeah.
I know you are back room of the Last Leg.
Yeah.
And everything as well. And now, certainly you were on this 5 years ago. This is the last time you were on this. And, you know, you were just breaking through 5 years ago. And it's gone insane. It's gone insane since
then. It is a bit crazy. And I would love to take credit for it. And I would love to sit there and go, yeah, as a researcher, I just always had high ambitions, but I think the truth is I was a shit researcher. I was basically who I am now. So I do no work. I go round the office, just chatting and gossiping.
Yep.
I couldn't make tea. So they were like, oh, what do we do with Rosie? Anna will put her in front of the camera so she's out of our hair.
Yes, well, I was the same. Whenever I've worked behind the scenes on things, I'm the same. I don't do anything and I just eat Haribo, but then they sack me for just eating Haribo.
And also, the real truth is, I want a researcher on shit old peg. And one time I found out what Jimmy Carr was on. And I thought, Matt, I can do that.
you can, and you've proven them right. You've proven that. Look, let's talk about your book, because you've been writing books for a few years now, and it's... And I think this, it'll be interesting to know how much of this is, how much of you is in this, but I've listened to the first one of these books, the amazing Edie Eckhart, and it's a lot of fun. It's about a girl starting secondary school, and then she's a girl who has cerebral palsy. But it's kind of, aside from the fact that obviously that's important in terms of, as you say, and as she says in the book, there's no books really with heroes or main characters that are disabled, but it's very much like the story that we'll all recognise from secondary school, don't you think?
Yeah, that's it. And I started writing books for two reasons, really. Firstly, even before comedy, I really wanted to be a writer. And I grew up on Jacqueline Wilson. Yeah. And I just loved how she never patronised us as children. She talked about real, proper topics. But then, alongside that, growing up, when I read those books, I never saw anyone like me. Yeah. I was never a disabled person as a main character, apart from fucking Colin in the secret garden. And I remember reading that and going, well, I'm not a sickly, weird, pale boy. I'm a fucking badass. So I wrote Edie because I wanted to show that disabled people can absolutely be the main character of a story. And yet, I always had Jacqueline Wilson in mind of away from talking about disability. Edie really goes through quite challenging adult things of falling in love, working out who she is, working out where she belongs, yep, in her school, whether her disability defines her. And these are all still topics and things that we go through as adults. Yes, so yeah, it's just hopefully a good, fun way to tackle the big things for kids.
I think so. I think it really is. And it's, you know, it's universal because everyone goes to secondary school feeling like, oh, am I going to be friends with the same people I was friends with? You know, am I going to be, who am I going to be kissing?
Yeah.
I mean, if it was me, no one for 10 years. but, yeah, it's, so, you know, that's universal, but obviously then there's this, you know, thing that presumably this character is, you know, has a lot of Rosie Jones in her, I would say. She's...
What do you mean? Idiot Cat is a group with cerebral palsy from a seaside town in Yorkshire who falls in love with another girl.
Yeah. And is a bit of a cheeky cunt as well. It's like... It's like...
Yeah, he got me. It's absolutely me.
But I love it because also I love the, you know, I love the fact that everyone's starting to pair up in the school, and Edie feels like she should be getting a boyfriend, and it takes her, you know, we go on the journey and it takes her a while to realise what she really wants herself. And it's, you know, it's beautifully told and it's very funny. It's genuine. I've only read the first one so far. And, you know, I'm a grown man, so I'm not going to fucking read anymore. But I will give... I'll give them to my daughter, who I think
good.
Will love them.
Yeah. But it should be a late birthday.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give it to her now. But, no, it's really terrific. I love the stuff about the Christmas... So she's in the Christmas Carol. She gets to play Scrooge in the Christmas Carol, but she goes in as a writer, really. She thinks she's going to rewrite the Christmas Carol. And I love the question she asks. You know, she says, these are the things. Why can't she be a woman? You know, why can't this happen? And then you ask, can Tiny Tim die? And that... I mean, I know... And, you know, I shouldn't get a disabled person on and say the only disabled character in literature, it would be better if he was dead. But... it would be better if he was dead. And I say that, and I think it's very right on, because, you know, I fucking hate the prick.
Again, Larry Colin is a loser.
And he's a cheerful loser. That's the annoying... He's so happy about everything.
Yeah. But to be serious... That's the disability representation I grew up with. You're singular people on their own that we should feel sorry for. I mean, apart from knowing that Tim is... Tiny. And about to fucking die. We don't know anything about him. And that is shit. And that is why he should die.
I completely agree. I agree. What a great step forward in disabled rights this has been for us. I feel I'm allowed to say stuff like this because I am now disabled myself, of course.
So how does your one ball affect you day to day?
Well, I can't clack them together like maracas anymore, so I've only got one. He's very lonely. I think I should get a parking ticket thing, shouldn't I? I should be allowed to park where I like because of that.
Richard,
yeah, what?
In the greatest possible way, fuck off.
Well, I'll get there. I'll get there eventually.
We'll all get there. That is what life is. It's all of us becoming more disabled.
It's very much
and
true.
And then we die. But some of us commit to the past from day one.
Oh, my God.
You started it!
So, like, in terms of... I mean, it is great. In the audio book, I don't know if it's in the book as well, but there is this very lovely thing we say when everyone was going around saying what they wanted to be at school. You said you wanted to be an author, And, you know, and for Edie as well, she gets to do the things that she doesn't even believe she can do. And it's, you know, it is very inspiring, and it's for everyone. We can all try and achieve our goals, whoever we are. And it's, so it's, you know, it's so lovely that you've got these books, and there's two more to come, right? So there's two out.
Yeah. So Joshua and the Third Edie.
Yeah.
But before that, I've written a non-fiction book for children.
Yeah.
Which is, again, for that secondary school transition. And it's all about making friends, dealing with bullies, navigating body changes, and your first crush. Basically, I've written the book that I needed as an 11-year-old. And you know what? I'm very, like, humble, I am. In my comedy, and then someone says, you're funny, I go, oh, fuck off. But I'm so proud of my book.
Yeah.
And I read my last non-fiction book yesterday for the last time before it goes to the copy editor. And I thought, oh, it's fucking great. I want to say, I'm amazing.
That's called Moving On Up, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, it does sound fantastic. And, you know, it's sort of surprised. I mean, a lot of this surprises me. It surprises me that there aren't more books. Like, you know, you'd sort of feel like, certainly even when I was at school, which is a long time ago, you would think, oh, things have moved on. But it feels like they haven't, you know, that these books are still necessary. Bullying's still a thing. I kind of hope things are... You know, like when I think about my childhood and the school grounds, and certainly with disability, we were so fucking horrible. Mm. And I include myself in that. But that was disabled people was, you know, it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of what a lot of comedians now do as edgy comedy. But that was what we were doing in the playground.
Yeah.
And I think, do you think things have moved on in those terms for disabled kids at school?
Yeah, definitely. And I'd extend that to sexuality.
Yeah.
I think children are so much more aware of diversity. And as you said, Edie realises she has feeling from another girl. Firstly, if I had been able to read something like that, it would have been revolutionary for me when I was 11. Because I literally spent all my school years fancying all girls, but going, oh no, I'm not gay because I got long hair. I'm not gay because I'm not a PE teacher. So to be able to see different people who are loud and out and queer must be amazing for this new generation. And I see it at book signings. I see 10, 11-year-olds going, thank you, Edie. Once a kid goes, and I do too.
Yeah.
And that just makes me so proud and so, like, emotional that they are able to live their true, authentic self.
Yeah, and it's such a lovely love story, and it's such a gently, so gently told, and it's so beautifully told. And I think, you know, it does feel, you know, I mean, it does feel sort of, I'm not revolutionary, because I don't think it's the first person to cover this, but it does, it's, you know, it's so great to see that in a kid's book. I would imagine there are libraries in schools in Florida that won't stock this book, but for various reasons.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's, if you read this and you are upset, but I mean, that's, but, you know, you're the kind of person who gets upset by people loving people in a way that you don't like. But it's, you know, it's so, you know, it's so well told, and you know, it's very, it's a, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
Thank
so well
you.
Done. It's you know, and it is revolutionary in that sense, in that to you know, that you are, again, that would never happen in my day. That would certainly never have happened. And again, we were awful, weren't we? It's you and me, Dave. We are homophobic, absolutely awful people. So I'd like to apologise to you. You can for what I was, you know, and secretly still am. So you can't change. Is it going to become a TV series? It feels like it should be a TV series.
Yeah, I reckon so. We're having the conversation, but this is a boring thing. Basically, you need a lot of, like, book material to make a TV series. Like, I would say one book is half a series.
Maybe.
And I'm a control freak. So I never want to be like Game of Thrones and the TV series overtakes a book.
Yeah.
So I quite like it being the ED book world. And then when I'm ready, then we'll go into TV.
Yeah. I mean, I really want you to play Edie in it, even, and like everyone else to be children, though.
Imagine.
I think it would be great. I think it would be good.
You know what? My biggest problem would be my tits. I think I got a face of an 11-year-old. But these bad boys absolute nightmare.
Well, look, it's really terrific. We'll talk about some of the, because you've done so much stuff. We'll talk about some of the TV stuff you've done and you're about to do. Let's talk about Out of Order, because that's coming up really soon, which is you're hosting a panel show.
Yeah.
So you've done a few. You've done a few panel shows in the past, but I don't think you've hosted anything before.
No. So it feels like a big boy game, and I loved it. What was amazing about production and Comedy Central was they gave me full control of, like, guests, captains, the set, how it worked, how it was written. So I really felt like, right, let's make a proper, silly, fun show.
Yeah. So what's the premise is people are, you've got to put people things in order that you imagine. So give us some examples of what would be.
So they're all people, and we got Rosie's Regulars, which is a group of absolute nut jobs. They are lovely but crazy. you know it's a Rosie Jones show because they were all staying at a hotel near the studio and it took 2 days before they were all shagging each other. You come in and be like, right, who shagged who? And we get a question like, who's been fired the most? Okay. So you got to order them and see who looks like them. Biggest loser.
Yeah. It's great. I know it's so hard, I think, because there's so much competition within this area and so many different ideas. And this is, you know, if you're looking for something that's different than everything else. Well, to some extent, some TV people are saying, can you do Taskmaster but call it something else? But this isn't that. And I can't think of anything exactly. It's like Naked Attraction, but they don't take their clothes off. They're standing in a row. Yeah. Right, that's it. That's sort of like...
That's it. The top line is about judging people. Yeah. But actually, what we created alongside Catherine Ryan and Judy Love, who are the team captains, is such a warm, silly, welcoming environment.
Yeah.
And it's actually about not judging her, but by its cover and getting to know people and what made them interesting. Yeah. And because I was a host, I was so determined to create a warm and diverse team, and that went right from the production to the regulars to the guests. And what we created was something fucking funny and great, but more than that, a party where everyone was welcome.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, and also it's great to just say the host and both team captains are women, which is very hard to think of any other situation on TV where that is the case.
That's it. I don't think it's ever happened, and quite rightfully I'm doing promo for it now, and the first question is normally, how is it doing an all-female TV show? And it was great and empowering, but I do want to say that I had total say on the team captains, and at no point was it, oh, can we get Catherine because she's a lady, and can we get Judy because she's a lady? And we'll have three lovely vaginas. Like, it was never, ever that. It was, can we get Catherine? Because she's fucking funny, yeah, and fucking phenomenal. And can we get Judy because she's fucking hilarious and a fucking queen?
Yeah. It's good. But it's, you know, it shows, I mean, since I started doing this show even, you know, like 10, 12 years ago, it would have, you know, it would have blown people's minds, I think, to think that you'd get there in 10 years, you know. And I'm not, and that's not to say we're anywhere like, oh, yeah, we've made it, everything's fine. But that is, you know, it's true that these, if you give people the chance and get them on, they will show they can do it. And the best, and what all those people who complain about people they don't like being on TV, they always say, we just want the best people to be on. But this is the best people doing the show, and they are, you know, they are women, so it's...
That's it, like, whatever gender we are, we're just three comedians, so we're right for this show.
Yeah. What channel is it on? Let's tell it so that people can watch it, because it's starting...
Comedy Central.
Correct. Good, we will watch that. It sounds terrific.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And you're right. Are you still on tour with your Triple Threat tour?
Yes, I've got 82,000 tour dates. I'm on the third leg. That's my biggest problem right now. I'm too funny. So, yeah, they keep on buying the tickets, so we keep on giving them daddy.
And are you able to tell me what your triple threats? I know one of the threats is rude, but I don't even know what it is.
So yeah, basically, I'm a triple threat because I'm disabled, okay. I'm gay. And I'm a prick. Oh, the BBC love me.
I mean, what's astonishing, and it's, you know, you see this when someone succeeds and then they're doing so much stuff, but how are you fitting everything in? Because there's loads of TV, there's TV series that you're very involved in, you're not just turning up for on the day, you're working on, you're writing books and you're doing stand-up. How the hell are you managing to do all of those things?
I'm a psychopath. Yeah. I haven't slept in 5 years. I don't know, really. I take everything as it comes on. I think I'm getting better now at working less, but working well.
Yeah.
And it's quite handy that I am incredibly intelligent, and I just don't faff around if I need to write my book, I get on and do it. But always overriding everything is that notion of beyond comedy, beyond writing, I want to be that representation for disability, and especially when I do talks about my books and I get disabled children coming up and saying, thank you, because he's wobbly like me and I used to be sad about that, but I'm not anymore. That's what makes me go, oh, it's worth all the travelling, all the late nights, all the times that I've function on 4 hours sleep and just driven by the hope and the desire to make the world a more accepting place for disability.
It's great. Absolutely. And it is. I think it's so important. And if people, for non-disabled people and disabled people, it's important for both sides, right? So for again, in my day, it was very much like hide everyone away, have different schools, and it's so important to see. I mean, everyone as a person and as a potential, people who have potential to do whatever they want to do. It's so important. So it's great you've got that, but you get, as all female comedians do, and a little bit male comedians, but not really, there's a lot of unpleasantness that you have to put up with, and an extra level to that unpleasantness you have to put up with, which obviously you've dealt with. How is that getting any? I mean, is the positive? I'm sure the positives do outweigh that, but does it get to you the trolling that you have discussed?
Yeah, completely. And I want to say again that positivity massively outweighs the negativity. But I'm still human, and it's just so exhausting that every time I'm on TV, which is every day, I will start trending on Twitter because of the amount of hate. And if you're a woman, you get more hate. If you're disabled, you get even more hate. And I mean, I think about it a lot. And firstly, a lot of the trolls are angry and sad and lonely people who are probably just angry at the world. So they see me, they see something different, and they see an outlet to put the anger on. But then a lot of the hate, I think, comes from the notion that normally disabled people fall into two camps. They are either vulnerable victims who are isolated and they need help, or they are the superheroes, they are the Paralympians winning gold medals and defeating all the odds. I I'm not a victim, but I'm not this perfect superhero. I'm flawed. I tell jokes. I swear. I talk about sex. I talk about my perfect vulva. Honestly, it's so nice. And I think a lot of people don't know what to do with me. And that confusion comes out in anger again and trolling. But honestly, I don't read it. B, I've been very open with the fact that I'm now in therapy and
They're ringing up now to get you. they've found out you don't read the comments, so they're ringing them in. Hello, line one. Yes, I agree, she is. Is that someone's got the loudest phone in the world? Someone's brought like an old-fashioned phone with them. It's connected to the wall in their house. Sorry, excuse me, I've got to take...
Absolute fucking lack of respect. But yeah, just being out there and being able to talk about the trolling and the effect it does have on my mental health, I think it's important. But the last thing is, the trolls, and I've looked into a lot of them and who they are, and I can honestly say that the trolls are fundamentally cunts.
But like, you know, you said backstage they know who you are now, so it is that thing where there are, you know, there might be a thing on Twitter where people go, who's the worst comedian? And then if they're naming you, they know you. And if you're the best worst comedian, that means they know who you are, that you're actually, you know, they don't know. They never say Richard Herring, and I am the fucking worst. They've never heard of me. That's the problem. So it's, you know, new and niche. For some reason, they don't like niche either. I can't put my finger on what's going on. I can't put my finger on what the problem is. If only I could put my finger on it. But it is interesting. And, you know, obviously, you did this documentary as well, which I don't think I can say the name of. It was controversial. And, you know, that word that it is, am I a R word, I will say. That I was watching My Girl, the 1980s, maybe 1990s film with Macaulay Culkin. And they use that word in that film. That's, you know, that's how... I mean, I know in America it's been used... It's still used, really, isn't it? A lot more than it is here. But it's kind of really astonishing to see that coming out of the mouth of kids. Not that I should be surprised, because we were...
Yes, I don't need to go into it. But there was a lot of controversy on the title and whether we should have that word out there. And I was the exec producer of the documentary, and it was so important to me to use that word. And in that way, we were trying to reclaim it or say it was okay. We used it because I am still called that word every week online in the street. But on top of that, it is still a word that is used casually amongst people and can be heard every day. And I don't think people take ableist slurs as seriously as other forms of discrimination. So, as you said, there was a lot of controversy around it, but I still stick by my decision to use it because it got people talking.
Yeah, and you know, your reasons for wanting to call it that are absolutely justified.
Yeah.
Because of exactly what you said. Yeah. So, absolutely. I did enjoy, you know, this is the second time I've watched an Alison Hammond interview, and I enjoyed you being interviewed on this morning. Firstly, you get to meet Alison Hammond, but my favourite thing was she went, I love you, you're my favourite, I love you so much, and then she called you Josie.
Yeah.
That was my favourite thing in it. Not as bad as Steve Pemberton in Inside Number 9, which she'd clearly never heard of any of it. I think she did genuinely love you, and she did correct herself immediately. Yeah.
Basically, I've made it a nightmare for everyone. From my social handles are Josie Rooms.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, oh my God, I love you. You're amazing, amazing, Josie.
Right, look, let's talk about some other stuff. Let's talk about, you were on the Raw Variety Show. Was that the last year?
Yeah, in November.
Wow, this is a legendary gig. It's a very difficult gig for comedians, I think. How did you get on?
Good, yeah. I was happy with my performance. I got a lot of shit online.
Right.
But again, I feel like it was from assholes.
Yeah.
And I didn't care because the most important part of the day was I met Cher. I kept going oh my God, I'm about to meet the Queen. And everyone was like, should we tell Rosie? She's dead. And I went, no, I mean Cher. And also I met my future wife,
okay,
Hannah Waddingham.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
I mean, we're going to get married as soon as a restraining order has been lifted.
And which she's an incredible woman. So yeah,
I love her.
And also like that's what an amazing story for her as well. Like to a long career and then suddenly becoming like super famous and being that talented as well.
Yeah,
and it just sort of shows what's there and the people don't know about, and then suddenly something comes to shine a light on them. You go, wow,
yeah. I'm rightfully so. And I mean, we talked a little bit, but her career, and now she's just been working.
Yeah.
And I'm a massive fan of musical acting, and I just never think she got the respect she deserves. No. It's amazing that people are like, oh, Hannah. But also, she does need to make space in her life for our wedding.
I would love to see it. I would love to see it. did you get to talk to Cher? Did you get close enough to say hello to Cher?
So I gotta be honest. I dialed up the disability because there was a big crowd of us, and I thought, mate, I got to stand out.
Yeah.
I can't let Mel C get the limelight. So when Cher walked by, I went, hello! And she shat herself.
I think Cher was on. This is ridiculous. I'm not even quite sure, but I think Cher. Well, I presented Top of the Pops twice, and Cher was on one of them live. I think. Am I right in saying that? So I think I introduced Cher, but I didn't get to talk to her.
When?
In like 1995.
Oh shit! Yeah. You're old.
I am. But I presented Top of the Pops, and there's no great. Oh shit. Which royals did you meet? Which proper royals did you meet?
Willie and that's, Katie.
Wow, that's pretty good.
The big boys.
Yeah. I mean, he could be king by the time this goes out. and it's only going out in a week and a half. I've had cancer, I'm allowed to do the jokes.
I'm saying nothing because I've already said all the inspiring things. I'm hoping for my damehood.
Yeah, I think you've got a very good shot. Did he say you like? Because you got to chat to them afterwards, don't you? Did he like the set?
Yeah. So they should not have let me loose with them because no one told me what to do. So I hugged them. I'm a hugger.
Yeah, that's good.
I told Kate that I loved her.
Good, someone does.
Again, very quiet. I'm waiting for the damehood.
Yeah, I don't think I'm gonna get the damehood. I think I've messed that up. Never mind. Good. That's very exciting. You know, it's so. But all of this stuff, you do, and there's so much stuff we don't have time to talk about at all. I love. So, like, you're doing horror. You've done Horrible Histories. This thing on Humble.
Yeah.
You played King Harold's mum.
Yeah.
It's called Githa. Is she called? Is that
yeah.
Her name?
Yeah.
How was that? Do you have to be upset when he got shot in the face? Is that was?
Yeah. So. Apparently, she was a very shouty lady.
Yeah.
So the producer was like, Mine was a shouty lady, Rosie Jones. And that the biggest thing I learned was all of the costumes of that era, they're quite tight and booby.
Right.
I was born in the wrong era. I always say I got big boobs, lovely hips. I would have thrived in that time.
But you're doing a lot of acting.
Yeah.
Do Call the Midwife, which I saw you getting very good reviews, and the other actors singing your praises.
Yeah, I love acting. I don't feel very lucky that I got such a diverse career, so I had to be writing a bit comedy a bit. And again, it's about getting the story and the representation out there. And I just loved screaming and getting my family out.
But you know, it's absolutely, it's remarkable how much you're doing. You did two series. Is it any more Trip Hazard? It sounds like an amazing show for you to have done. You did
Trip Hazard in my travel show on Channel 4, and it was crazy. And even that just going out there, abseiling, skydiving, jumping up cliffs was again so fun and silly, but so empowering to watch a disabled woman do all that.
Well, or anyone do that, you know, or the things you're doing, most people would go, I'm not going to do that. So it really is, like, extraordinary. And, you know, I hope they're looking after you and you're safe. I'm sure you are.
But when I filmed Trip Hazard, I had to talk to my agent and say, it's a Channel 4 trying to kill me. Because it really felt like, how can we make this as dangerous as possible? But it was so fun.
Yeah. No, it looks incredible. It's like, you know, all of these, it's just great to, you know, it's great when someone's career takes off like this. All I worry about is whenever it's anyone, is just like, don't burn yourself out, don't do, you know, make sure you get some time to yourself.
Yeah.
But the temptation, it's so hard, isn't it? Because as a comedian, you know that how difficult it is to get work. And so when you're offered work, it must be very hard to go, no, I'm well paid work. No, I'm gonna turn that down. So you try to fit everything in. But
yeah.
It's extraordinary how much you've done and since you were last on this show.
Yeah.
And how little I've done since you were last on this show.
It's interesting, and I think if we had this conversation a year ago, I would have gone, yeah, I'm good and busy, but really I was close to burnout. Yeah. And I remember I got nominated for a BAFTA. Yeah. Now I didn't win because I'm dickhead. Called Claudia Winkleman what an asshole. And I remember at the time I literally went, right, I got Melbourne, then I'm filming that, then I'm gigging there, then I got the BAFTAs, then I'm writing that, then... And then I had to stop myself because at no point during that time could I sit and let it sink in that I have been nominated for the fucking BAFTA. It really felt like just one more thing to tick off. So since then I've tried to say no to a lot more, and the things I do I really sit with, and I, like on Saturday, I filmed my first stand-up show, and I really made a weekend of it. My parents came down, my closest friends, and I sat with it and I celebrated how far I come. So it's, I'm always a person who will work every day because I love it, but it's also giving yourself those moments of celebration.
Absolutely. And yeah, and it's so hard because everything you're doing is good and looks like just incredible fun. So it's, you know, I know it's hard work, and I know writing books is very, very hard work. And so it's, you know, I know you deserve it and you're putting the graft in, but it's, you know, it's so tempting to just go, this is great. Oh, this is great. This is great. And, you know, and you should enjoy it and you will. And that's a brilliant, absolutely brilliant attitude and the correct attitude. So, look, we're going to have to wind up, even though there's loads more we could talk about. You'll have to come back on. Do go and buy the Edie Eckhart books. And there's more coming up. And look out for Moving On Up as well, which sounds absolutely fantastic. Are you still working on the sitcom Disability Benefit? Is that coming out?
Yes. So I'm writing that now.
Right.
Sitcom for Channel 4. And currently writing episode 4.
Right.
And then we're filming that in the summer. And hopefully it'll be out by the end of the year.
Right. You're an absolute fucking machine, so well done for that. And sometimes I've been known to work too hard, can't quite work out how you manage to do all this, but I'm glad you are. And I'm glad that it's, you know, what's great, Rosie, is you're right at the centre of it, and it's not just, some people will be tempted to sit back and go, I'll let someone else write a book and put my name on it.
Oh,
but this
no.
is so, and I know 100% you wrote every word of that book because it's so you. So, I'm, you know, it's so brilliant to see someone doing so well. And, you know, it's a shame it has to be you. But I guess we'll just have to take that. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the amazing Rosie Jones. Thank you very much. Come back next week. We'll do some more. You have been listening to Rahulastapur Book Club with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Rosie Jones. Thank you to Scant Regard for doing the music. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, and Ben Evans, not that one. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre and all the team behind the scenes. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz on GoFasterStrike.com production.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.